Here's some good news. Gen Z seems to be coming to church in droves right now. And that got us thinking, what is working to actually engage with Gen Z? Some churches are trying things that used to work. And in my experience, and based on reviews from actual Gen Zers, they're not working quite as well as we thought they did. In this conversation, we're going to unpack what actually works to engage with Gen Z right now. Let's do this. You're listening to the Reach Right podcast, the show dedicated to helping your church reach more people and grow. Well, hey guys, I'm Thomas.
And I'm Ian.
And today we're talking about Gen Z and what's actually working to engage them in our churches. Should be a good conversation. I don't know about you, but I am seeing Gen Z, like I'm seeing just what I think is like the baby steps of a, maybe not a revival, but like a real outpouring that seems to be happening right now with Gen Z. And I think the data backs it up. I'm hearing these kinds of accounts from lots of other pastors. I'm so blessed to see this. But I think there's something really happening right now in my church and maybe in your church as well, those of you in the Reach Right family, with Gen Z. And so that kind of got us questioning, and our editors and our team that helps with the podcast here, they said that we need to do an episode dedicated to thinking through some of the things churches try to reach Gen Z. What works, what doesn't. They gave us some tips. We have, though you and I both are clearly not Gen Z, Ian. You're even less Gen Z than I am.
Yeah, one more year, just for clarity. Yeah.
There's a one-year difference that is really, you know, different night and day, honestly.
Huge, it's huge.
The idea that we're seeing Gen Z, we want to make sure we're effectively reaching them. The fact is that most of our leaders in churches are not currently Gen Z. They're just kind of a different culture. They're a different culture from what worked for a Gen Xer like yourself, Ian, to Gen Z. It's really pretty different. So we wanted to go through an episode today and just kind of talk about what we're seeing working, what isn't. We had actual bona fide Gen Zers weigh in on all these topics. So we're giving you it right from the horse's mouth about what's actually working here. So
yeah, not just from us old guys. That's right. So there you
exactly
go.
Right,
so. And I think we should define, you know, what age range Gen Z is, because you know what's so funny? It made me think, we obviously, speaking of our age, have been doing this for a while. You and I used to, in consulting with churches, hear all the time how much churches want to reach millennials. We heard that for years, right? And now millennials are older, and so Gen Z is the main focus, if you will. And so, yeah, I think a lot of people, they, because of all of these now, these terms and Gen Z here, forget what age range they're in, Thomas.
Yeah. Yeah. Usually the things that I see is that Gen X goes till about your age. So, you know, like, so 1979, 1980 is the cutoff for Gen X.
Yeah. And then, so I'm a young Gen X, just so everyone knows. Yeah.
Thank you for clarifying that. Yeah. You can give yourself that assurance. And then you have millennials, which I'm right on the line between the two, but that goes to around 95 or so. And then Gen Z, they're basically in that, like, they're born around 96 until around 2010 or so. So my youngest son is not a Gen Z, but I have two kids that are Gen Zers.
My daughter just makes it too. Yeah.
Your daughter would be a Gen Zer also. So we also have that knowledge that we come at this from, was as parents of Gen Zers, we can speak to it a little bit as well. So awesome. But well, why don't we do it this way, Ian? You can kind of throw out the topic and we'll rank them. And I guess we have a ranking system we'll use today. You want to go over how we'll be ranking stuff?
Yeah, we're going to be ranking prime picks, which means that those are the best. Mm-hmm. Possible plays, meaning it could work, and then past their prime, meaning out of date.
Something worked for you Ian, used but for, wouldn't work
yeah,
for
I was about
kids,
to say, something you used for Gen X or older millennials. Yeah. So there you go. So, but, and yeah, we'll dig right in, Thomas. So, so as we go into it, so the first one we have is accountability groups.
Yeah. Okay. Accountability groups. So I love this one because this one is really counterintuitive. We were told for so long that, like, for millennials or Gen Xers, like, that they just don't really want this. Like, this is not something that they're looking for. And I have seen, and just Gen Z approved, like, from our staff here that's Gen Z, like, I am hearing over and over again that this is one of the most life-giving things that they are a part of, is actually having... having spiritual encounters outside of, like, big Sunday service and that kind of stuff, but actual groups of people, usually same gender, that get together and just actually talk about the things they're struggling with, what they're thinking about certain situations with the Lord, all of that kind of stuff. And they're actually getting real life from this. Like I said before, I think we're in the middle of an outpouring of the Holy Spirit, maybe a renewal, or if you want to use that term, revival. I think that usually revival comes with things like repentance, and accountability groups are the best context for that kind of stuff to happen. So for me, using our ranking system, I see this as a prime pick. If I'm trying to reach more Gen Z, I'm leaning into smaller gender-based accountability groups that are, you know, men with men and women with women, and really leaning into that kind of stuff. And watching them kind of like do life together that way. Gen Z is hungry for that, I would say.
Yeah, and I've seen that this is a big deal for my daughter, speaking of that, like, so at our church, and, you know, we call this still in the category of youth, she's in high school, she's a senior, making those and being with in female accountability, either a group or event type settings. My son, again, not quite a Gen Z, or a little younger like yours, your younger son. My son's 14. I think yours is 13, right? So, but he's now a part of, for the first time, his own guys small group, and it's been so life-giving to him. So, awesome. It's exactly accountability. So,
we've seen this trend change in our youth group too. Like, I know that I lead our. So I'm an executive pastor at my church, and I work weekly with our youth pastor who pours into our kids. And, you know, my model from youth ministry, I was a youth pastor many moons ago, and it was like, do big events and get lots of kids to come in. And he keeps telling me, nah, the kids just want to do small groups. Like, we really want to lean into devotional groups and small groups and get candid with one another and lean in heavily into that. And I see, like, at first I push back and say, no, come on. I know youth ministry enough to know kids want food. They want prizes and games. They really want accountability right now. And they want real life one-on-one relational stuff. And so we're seeing that work actually in our youth group. So yeah, just proof is in the pudding with that. That's what I'm seeing too.
Yeah, absolutely. Next one would be apologetics courses.
Yeah. Okay. So this one I'm a little on the fence on, not on the first word. Apologetics, I think, is something is really working with Gen Z right now. It's the courses part that I'm not totally sure on right now. So I think that there is a great renewal in interest in apologetics as a field. You know, when you guys like, you have guys like Wesley Huff go on to the Joe Rogan podcast, and like, if you haven't seen that, such a valuable episode to watch, and just digging into that guy. I know that my kids really like his content. You know, even like as far as Charlie Kirk got into some of those apologetics, right? You know, like he was more on the political side, but definitely got into apologetics.
Sometimes. Oh, he got into that quite a bit too. Yeah.
Kids like really, like they're eating that up. So if the statement was apologetics content, I would say prime pick, absolutely. They're really into apologetics content. I'm seeing that. As far as courses, when I think of that, that's like, you know, maybe going to several sessions, whether online or in person, to learn how to, to learn how to do apologetics. It's probably something that would have some interest. I haven't seen a lot of evidence that like people are clamoring for that right now. So for that reason, I'm probably going to put it in a possible play.
That's what
something
I was
that
say.
I think a lot of churches should be considering, but I would lean into apologetics as a whole. In my sermons, I would dig in more to like reasons to defend the faith and why what we believe is patently true, and like helping people have a reason to understand that, because we've been bombarded, especially younger generations, for years with the opposite content. Finally, I think some of that, content that like gives a reason for the hope we have, that is starting to really thrive right now. So apologetics content is a home run. Consider possibly doing a course on it to help people learn how to better defend their faith, I think is valuable.
Right. And with our kids, case in point, and just even older, they're learning from just content over social media and everything. And I think they're absorbing that almost as a natural course, right? So for sure. So the next one would be community service.
Yeah. Okay. So this one here, I'm starting to wonder if it's waning. I don't think it is, but like, I know that this probably, it might feel like it's been a little bit obvious for us for a while. I've noticed this as a pastor for 10 years ago. I saw this trend, I think, of that we noticed that when we did Laundry Love Ministry, that all of the new people in our church and the young people in our church really like loved it. Even if they didn't know Jesus yet, we would take over laundromats and help people that couldn't afford to wash their clothes get their clothes washed. People that weren't Christians and were just kind of Christian curious and coming into our church, they were really excited about getting involved in some kind of community service. I don't have any evidence that that is no longer the case, but I guess I just think that in some ways this is not some new thing unique to Gen Z. I think millennials, it probably peaked with them. Millennials were very interested in community service. I don't think it's waned at all. So I have a hard time saying anything other than a prime pick. I would really lean into community service, especially just helping with issues of poverty. And though if you're in that kind of an environment where that would make sense, then do it. I think for most churches, what you have to wrestle with is what are those community needs that I have? Like, so if you're in a suburban area and homelessness isn't something that you deal with in your community, then like a lot of times churches see that as something really trendy and we have to start a homeless outreach and that stuff. If there's no homeless there, or there's like one and they live, you know, 40 miles from you or something, or, you know, a 15 minute drive away, you probably have other community service things that would be more valuable. Like, so for my church now, I'm in a relatively affluent area in Honolulu. There isn't a laundromat in our community. And even though I've had success doing Laundry Love Ministries in poorer communities at other churches, it doesn't make sense for us here because that's just not the environment we live in. So finding that right community service that people are passionate about in your area, that's where you lean in. And so I can't call it anything other than a prime pick, I don't think. But I don't want you to think it's exclusive just to Gen Z, I guess is what I'm getting at.
No, and one thing I'll add to that, I think what you're right, this was bigger with millennials, community service, but it all came with the desire, starting with millennials, to be involved in a part of something bigger than themselves, you know, something that where they knew they were making a difference. We just hired someone in Gen Z, and one of the things that she said here was that made a big impact in why we hired this person was, I saw what you were doing at Reach Right as something that would really impact people and that I can do to impact the world, you know? And I think that was born out of that millennial mindset of being something, mm-hmm. part of something bigger than themselves, getting outside themselves. So the one thing that definitely has rolled over to Gen Z is definitely making a difference. They want to make a difference in the world. For obvious reasons, as we see what our world is going through. So I think they see that more and feel that more than we did at their age. So, yeah. So other than that, Facebook groups.
Okay. So they're lobbing us softballs. Our Gen Zers are like throwing us little softballs here to try and knock out of the park with this. All right. So I want to defend Facebook groups for a second before I get into my actual assessment. Facebook groups are the most valuable thing on Facebook today, I would say, for churches. There was a time where churches had a lot of questions on whether I set up a Facebook page or a Facebook group. And our counsel for churches, since the beginning of Reach Right, was set up a Facebook page, because a group is kind of something where everybody can chime in and you want to be able to put information out there. That was in a different world when you had a Facebook page and people that followed your Facebook page, they'd see everything you posted. Now we live in this world where even if I have thousands of followers on Facebook, our actual display rate on how often people are seeing our posts are, it's like, you know, less than 1% of people will see a typical Facebook post, even if they follow you. So it's out of control how little reach you have there. The one exception to that is Facebook groups. And so if you have a group for your church, there is some value to that if your people are on Facebook. And that's the issue with Gen Z, is that they are not on Facebook. The one reason why Gen Z is on Facebook, and really their killer product right now, is Facebook Marketplace, because Gen Z, especially the young ones, they have all kinds of financial challenges that I think it's really a dire situation for some of this generation. Owning a home is all really hard to do. So a lot of them are very open to secondhand stuff. Facebook Marketplace is a place to do that. My kids have Facebook accounts only for that reason. They've never made a post in their life, but that's why they have Facebook accounts, is to be able to do Facebook Marketplace deals. But they're not on groups either. So as far as reaching Gen Z, yeah, our Gen Z podcast producers, they lobbed us a softball. That is definitely a past their prime idea in my view.
Yep. There you go. Nothing much more to add. Yeah. The only reason my son has a Facebook account is so that old coaches can see his football videos. He's a football player. So that's, but that's it.
I didn't so know that. That's, yeah. That's funny.
Yeah.
So I'll have to follow him.
Yeah. There you go. So, all right. Next one, TikTok outreach.
TikTok outreach. Okay. So, interestingly, I saw a study that said that social media use, it actually has peaked back in 2023. That came out just this week, hot off the presses. So the peak social media use happened 2 years ago, and there has been a slight decline in the amount of time people are spending on social media, which is the first time that's happened since social media started, right? It's been just a constant upward trajectory, and finally, it's maybe peaked a little bit. So as far as like a TikTok outreach, so this is kind of obvious that like the platform, if you were going to kind of give each platform a generational tag, you would say Facebook is Gen X and boomers. You would say Instagram is millennials. You'd say Gen Z is TikTok, and I would say Gen Alpha is YouTube. And YouTube kind of permeates all of
them. There's a little bit of
them.
Mixture in there as well.
Of course, like, you know, so yeah. I personally use Instagram primarily. I think you probably do too, is your main one. When I use TikTok, it's only looking through the YouTube, the Reach Right account. I don't have my own personal one. I use YouTube a lot. So it's going to vary from person to person. But I do think it's true that Gen Z is the most prevalent age cohort on TikTok. And so if you're going to choose one platform to try and reach Gen Z on social media, TikTok would probably be the one that I would choose. Although they all have Instagram accounts also. So I wouldn't just, I'd still lean into Instagram more. Because I think you have a broader reach because you use it and I use it and millennials use it and Gen Z uses it. And my Gen Alpha son is begging me to have an account now on Instagram. So there's opportunity here. I'm kind of struggling like to say, I think in the true sense, I do believe it maybe is past its prime. Like, I think that its prime was probably 2 years ago. I think the prime TikTok time. I think that we've seen in our numbers that our numbers are diminishing on TikTok. Like all things, when a platform is new, there's less competition on it. If you got on TikTok in 2021 or during the pandemic, like you had enormous results. And now those results are much harder to get. So I would say that I'm not ready to throw it out completely. I think churches should be clipping their sermons, turning them into TikToks. That is a valuable play to do. But I'd say it's a possible play. It's not something that I think you like number one thing you have to reach out to. I wouldn't stop doing it if you're doing it right now. But I'm not ready to lift it to like something every church must be doing. So in this case, a possible play is the target.
Agreed. Yep. I agreed with that. So next one's a good one, I think. Well, not saying I'm grading it yet or ranking it, but youth worship, and specifically like a youth worship night where the youth is allowed, or where allowed, maybe not the right word, where
we'll permit them to worship.
where they're able to lead worship and and it, you know, being a Gen Z worship night led thing or only. Yeah.
Yeah. I'm seeing this totally bust out right now. This has been a home run, and this may be Hawaii centric. That's my sample size is mostly Hawaii, but I'm seeing a revival take place in churches that have youth led worship teams. My son, who is 13, he's been to two or three youth camps at this point. We've lost a couple due to COVID. My 13-year-old son, like, he comes back from youth camp every year and he's like, hey, do you mind if we listen to worship on the way home from youth camp? Or, you know, he's like, and, you know, at other times he's just not engaged with it. But there's just something about, like, at our camp, we have actually a youth-led worship. We have really talented young people in our church and surrounding churches that are great, not just musicians, but actual worship leaders, and really are getting into the heart of this. And I know for myself is that when I had people that led worship when I was a 18-year-old that were in my generation, or slightly, you know, they were Gen Xers. It was so meaningful to me when all I had experienced before was boomer worship, like having people that were singing songs that sounded like the way Pearl Jam would sing it. Like, that was really cool to me when worship was like that way. I think that's happening. Like, my son comes back from camp and he's like, you know what? Like, I only really like worship that's from young people. Like, I don't really like it when all of my, here in Hawaii, we call them aunties and uncles lead worship. It's not as good. So he's very direct that way, as kids tend to be. So I'm seeing this. I'm seeing revival happen when kids are allowed to do that. I'm not sure if that's a Hawaii thing or a Texas thing.
No, it's so here in the Austin, Texas, my church, which again is a larger church, we have a great worship team. And as a matter of fact, we have like a whole team of Gen Z, just worship leaders. Awesome. We call our youth nights wave nights. Okay. So for wave nights, that's all it is. It's not the only thing that happens during those nights, but the worship is only led by youth and Gen Z. And
yeah.
Oh, that's where they're impacted the most. And compared to, because a lot of them are in our main service too, where we sometimes will have some older folks involved in the worship, but we still would usually have someone even in that worship, our main church worship style, that's younger. So yeah, but oh yeah, when it's all led like that and it's all them together, oh, they're most certainly impacted more. I've seen that.
Yeah.
So
yeah, totally.
That's good stuff. So we definitely said prime, right? Oh no, not past their prime. We said
prime pick.
Yeah. So prime pick. Good. Other than that, this one's interesting. I think the Christian music scene. So for outreach to Gen Z.
Yeah. All right. So the context for this, I was talking to our producers on the podcast here, and we were talking about just my context. And I know you came to faith a little bit later in life than I did, Ian. But like, you know, kind of growing up in high school in the 90s and, you know, kind of my college in the 2000s, the Christian music scene, especially like in that independent wave, like it was really huge at that time. And it was like some of my most worshipful moments as a Christ follower was in the middle of it was a Five Iron Frenzy concert. I remember going to as a ska band from the 90s that was huge. They still do things once in a while here now, but loved those guys. And like, I just remember like worshiping to a worshipful song that they had when they were performing it live. And we would go all to kinds of all kinds of hardcore shows when I was in Bible college, of all these Christian bands like Project 86 or Dogwood and all these guys, these hardcore music scene. And that was our identity. And we have, like, it was an evangelism opportunity, like where we could bring people in to music that sounded cool. But, you know, it was kind of that cool wave of Christian music. And then like everything else, it got really commercialized to the point now. And I don't mean to say that there's not a thriving Christian music industry. Like, I think Forrest Frank is probably more popular than any Christian musician that I remember in my lifetime right now. Like, just what he's doing and like just how I see him and everything. And Brandon Lake is doing crossover stuff with Jelly Roll. And so I'm not saying anything about the Christian music industry, but I just think, like, as an outreach, the scene that we used to have where there was like a local scene and we would be making, we'd all made bands at the time. And I was in a Christian band and like we all did that kind of stuff. And it was a huge evangelism tool. I don't see that happening the same way with this generation. It's probably because the rise of streaming and that kind of stuff just makes music all accessible. So I'm not really seeing it. So for that reason, I'm going to say it's a past its prime type of a thing. But I'd be interested in our audience if you're seeing any of that kind of stuff happen. Like, because it kind of seems counterintuitive to what we said about worship, like being something and youth worship being really valuable, but the music scene not being as valuable. I'm not really sure how that plays in together, but I'm not seeing it the same way I did in our generation.
Yeah, and I agree. You're making me actually have some funny memories. So same thing. It was bigger when I came to faith. And I would go see like David Crowder's and the Sean McDonald's. And then there was also, as you know, I was really into metal and hard rock. And so when I found a first, like really good, what I thought was really good Christian metal band, I remember when I was valeting cars and then I got my first real job, my parting gift to some of these guys I was valeting with was CDs of a hard, like, hard rock Christian band at the time, giving them these CDs. So there's
Do you remember
a little,
the name of them?
Oh my gosh. And you would ask me that, it might have been Cutlass or something like that.
Cutlass.
So yeah. And
yeah, I think that's.
Yeah. So it was a hard rock Christian band. So yeah, my son's not going to hand out CDs to his friends. So.
Well, so I remember as a kid, like, so I went through that whole 90s, secular music scare as a Christian. My family became Christians when I was a young teenager. It was probably like 92, 93. We started going to church. And so, you know, I was a young teenager, and because we were a Christian family, like then my parents said, okay, it's time for you to give up all your secular music. And so they took away my CDs, and I'll never forget them. Like, they sat me down with our pastor of our church and they handed me a tape. And they said, hey, you like Metallica? You're going to love these guys. And it was a tape from Petra, the band Petra, which was, I was like, okay, gosh. Like, so that's probably more like where we are right now with the Christian music scene. Maybe for some kids, it's just like.
I think us naming these bands, we need to move on because we're going to turn off Gen Z.
We're dating ourselves, yeah. So our audience knows. They know who Petra is. Come on, let us know in the comments if you know who Petra is. And drop your favorite Petra song.
And who's better, them or Cutlass? There you go.
Yeah, there you go. Please let us know.
That is funny. So, but all right. So next one would be digital fast challenges. Interesting one.
Yeah, I think like I'm seeing this actually really work for a lot of young people. So when we say this, we're talking about doing fasts from digital things. So usually it's going to be social media. Perhaps it's all devices. Maybe it's watching YouTube videos or Netflix or those kinds of things, or just everything all together. When we read about fasts in the Bible, like I think we've kind of misguided ourselves. I believe all fasts in scripture are food related. They're not related to anything other than food. So it's not, and they didn't have digital stuff, obviously. So we're making some leaps there. I don't know that it does the exact same thing as like actually depriving our bodies of food. I don't think it's quite the same spiritual encounter as like biblical fasting. However, I do think there is great value in doing these kinds of things. And so I'm not saying throw it out at all. I have seen my children, we've done things as a family where we said, hey, as a family, we're going to take a time, we're going to pause from screens for a season to fast and really seek the Lord. And it was helpful. We've done those things. I have since my children, my older ones have become adults, 18 and 20. So not old, but I've seen them take on fasts of their own. So they've made their own decision to start fasting. And that to me is a signal that it is something that Gen Z values. And I've seen it be really helpful. So I don't know, like, I think like church-wide digital fasts, I'd say is like a possible play. But I think just like kind of having those conversations and talking about the idea of fasting from food, but also doing digital fasts and letting them come up with those ideas on their own or in their accountability groups that we talked about before. I think that's something that is a prime pick, I would say, kind of encouraging them to do that of their own volition.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, it's kind of funny. For my kids, it's less of a fast. It's more of a punishment. So that's yes, exactly. So it's meaning, and I say that, I think if someone's in Gen Z and they're in their 20s and they're, you know, then you're right. Like it could become a fast, like for, I think younger, like for your younger son and mine.
Yeah.
And then even my daughter who's 17, you know, this would be the first thing is if they make a mistake, this is what goes away. So
you'll be doing a digital fast for the next week.
That's right. That's right. So more,
you can be much more spiritual that way, Ian.
That's right.
It'll be like from you and the Lord are bringing discipline together. You know what?
They'll be less angry with me if I put it that way.
Yeah, so I doubt it. I doubt it.
Yeah, probably. Right. So good. Next one, a couple more. We have church Discord servers.
You sound baffled.
It did. It caught me off guard at first. Yeah. So I missed this one earlier, but church Discord servers.
I have not seen this ever done successfully on a church-wide level, a Discord server for a church. They probably exist. If you do that at your church, let me know in the comments. I'd love to hear about that. Maybe even I'll reach out to you and ask a few questions about what you're doing here. If you don't know, Discord... the closest thing I can compare it to, if you don't use Discord, is something like Slack, where it's a software where people can have conversations on different channels, different topics, do direct messages with one another. In theory, it's a really great idea for a church to have a Discord server and be able to talk about church ideas. I think as a leadership team, my church is making the pivot into Slack right now. But I think for a church-wide type of a thing, Discord probably, it feels like it's a really good idea. I think it's probably best executed on a smaller scale at most churches. So I think where I've seen it work for Gen Z is maybe a youth Discord server or an accountability group has a Discord server, doing those kinds of things where you can have more conversation happening that way. You do need to get to critical mass. So like a Discord server of three people isn't great. Like it's kind of pointless. Just do a group text, I guess, if you're doing that. But if you know, that's why it does kind of make sense. And I'm not surprised if I do hear some of these kinds of stories of a church-wide Discord server working out, but I just haven't seen it yet. So I'm going to put it for that reason in a possible play. And then I may upgrade it if one of you writes a comment and tells me that it works really well. I may rescind that, and I want to learn from you on how it's working.
Yeah, for sure. So good. Well, last one here, YouTube devotional series.
Yeah, okay. So by this, we're talking about more than just putting your sermons on YouTube, but making additional YouTube content that is a devotional for people. So I've seen some pastors do this as, you know, they'll do like a weekly read through a Bible passage and do kind of your devotional time together. The issue here is that while I think it's an idea that could work, it's not as interactive as Gen Z, I think, is looking for. So I think that's something that we're kind of missing on this, is that YouTube by its very nature is a monologue that, you know, I'm asking, like in this conversation today, we're asking for comments from people, right? Because we want to make a dialogue happen, and trying to initiate that is one of our big goals when we do this. But I think it just naturally isn't bent for it the same way that, like we just talked about, a Discord server that is a natural dialogue that people go back and forth on. So I'm not totally convinced that it's exactly right. Now, does it hurt you? Absolutely not. It's not past its prime. YouTube is in the ascendancy. I think that there's all kinds of evidence that people are looking for good content, even like streaming content of people just playing video games is something that's really up, like one of the most popular things on YouTube. You know, certainly you could do something like that in a theological or scriptural context, going through books of the Bible, giving a running commentary, having personality for it. Now, it just takes a special kind of a leader or a YouTuber to do that kind of stuff. As someone that makes YouTube videos all the time, I know we get we get caught up in this idea. And I think I see young people think this all the time, is like, I want to be a streamer when I grow up, because they watch it and it seems super easy. Like, I just play video games and talk. That's what I'm doing anyway. So why not just be a streamer with my career? Well, those guys are actually really skilled and they grind to make that happen. These guys that are successful streamers, they start out by playing these video games like 40, 50, 60 hours a week on camera, and they grind doing it. So I think it's hard. If your thought is, I'm going to do a 5-minute devotional and it's going to take me 5 minutes a week to do this and I'm going to get a huge audience for it, not happening. Like, if you really lean into it and you probably start doing it really consistently daily and build an audience, maybe. But for that reason, I'm going to say it's a lot of work and I don't know if the juice is worth the squeeze. So I'm going to put it in a possible play is what I would call it.
Yeah. Possible play. Definitely not past its prime. So
yeah,
it's a funny thing to me. And again, showing my age, when I see my son like watching someone play a video game, I'm like, okay, yeah. Why is that interesting?
But I know you watch Mortal Kombat streamers all the time, Ian. I know that's
Mortal Kombat. Hey, that's not Christian. Let's not talk about that. So that's funny. I'm sure awesome. We have some Mortal Kombat playing pastors, but you don't have to let us know about that. We won't tell your parishioners. Don't. So
keep that to yourself, that's
right.
Probably.
That's right. That's right.
Now, so, we would love to hear if you disagree with us on some of these things here. Here's what I want the most. If you're doing something that you have seen a lot of results with Gen Z, please tell us. Share the wealth in the comments down below. Thanks, guys, for being a part of the Reach Right family, and we'll see you next time.
See ya.